We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 321 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, that's Levon, and we've got just two things on the docket today. Dembélé and the Copa del Rey. And I don't think either of them is particularly positive, but that said, before we do Copa del Rey, before we do Athletic Club and all of that business, it's time to talk about Ousmane Dembélé. And I said it on the earlier show this week, I said it on the two shows last week, was there going to come a time when it was going to be the last time we were talking about it? Well, it seems like with his IG post that said negotiations are still ongoing, but it does feel over, right? With Xavi's words, with the words coming from Barcelona brass, it sounds like, and then him not being called for the Copa del Rey, as if, you know, this one is finally done, with the exception of, I mean, what's going to happen next in terms of him leaving and being sold in January, or does he wait it out and not play until the end of the summer? Levon, I mean, first you can react to the IG post. I know that you kind of cheek roll your eyes about it a little bit.
Can we talk about Dembélé, or has he prohibited it?
I don't know how much he speaks Spanish, obviously, still, but I don't think he also speaks English. But I don't actually have that many negative things to say about his partial career. I mean, he was too much money, he couldn't stay healthy, and that's where we're at. I mean,
I think it's just ridiculous. That letter might have been the worst letter that I have seen in my life. Like, I'm struggling to think of a letter that is more lame, more pathetic than that.
I mean, the Dan Gilbert Cleveland Cavaliers one. You know what I'm talking about? When LeBron James signed with the Miami Heat, Dan Gilbert to LeBron James might be the worst one I've ever considered.
Yeah, that was lame too. But did Dan Gilbert actually write like three different lines with "I prohibit anybody from doing this"? I prohibit Dan Gilbert say, "Love is a form of blackmail." It's almost like, I think that when you write a letter like that, it's not to make you yourself look even a lot worse than even the people who still kind of support you, or kind of like a grain of sympathy towards you, already look at you, right? So I don't know. I thought it was just incredible. I also think that the only way that Barcelona sends him to the stands is if behind the scenes, what we are not seeing, things are seriously wrong. So, because it's not a normal negotiation tactic, especially because this is not a situation where the club has any leverage. When Barcelona sent Ilaix Moriba to the stands, there was leverage, like, you know, because he was not a first team player yet. So we could say, well, you know, you're just going to train with the B team, because the point of young players from the academy is to develop them. So Barcelona used the leverage to actually either force him to renew or force him to sell. With Dembélé, we don't have any leverage, because we know that he'll be very happy to just sit in the stands. It's even better for him because he won't be able to get injured. So there was none. So the only reason for Barcelona actually taking it there is because they got tired of being treated like idiots by Dembélé and his agents, where Dembélé goes to Xavi and says, "Yeah, you know, I'm really happy here, I want to stay." And then the club has to send I don't know how many emails to his agent before there's even a reaction, and so on and so on. And then for 6 months there are talks where people supposedly get closer and closer and closer, and then all of a sudden they come with ridiculous demands, and so on and so on. So I think that the reason that the club actually chose this option which brings us no benefit whatsoever, is because Dembélé basically made it impossible for us to look ourselves in the mirror.
For all of the, we'll say, the big money moves of Coutinho and Griezmann and Dembélé, you always got the sense that when it was time to be done, just because they were never going to be able to reach up those expectations, that whenever it was time to get to be done with those, it was all going to crash down and be ugly on the way out. I always did hold out hope that Dembélé, of those three, where I always felt like, and I think Xavi agreed with me, that naturally he's the best fit on the field. And so you always felt like the path forward, even true, that if he chose to stay, unlike Coutinho and Griezmann, I would take him back if he decided to renew and if that negotiating had gone well, but it didn't. And to the point about the post, you know, I would, in normal circumstances as well, say that there's no way that the player, I mean, I worked with professional players behind the scenes and stuff, and there's no way the professional players actually the ones who are writing that and releasing it, with the exception of all these comments by his agent Sissoko prior to this, that actually does make me believe that Dembélé came out with this himself and thought that was a good idea with support from just family, whoever it may be. But I can't believe that he didn't have somebody, not even his main agent, but a PR. Usually all these players have their own, not PR firms, but they have an agreement with some kind of PR representative as well. And I can't believe it got through all that different stuff and he hit send on it. But my other thing about Dembélé too is, I don't know, maybe it's just because it's just my nature, but I mean, even if Dembélé wanted to stay, negotiations didn't work out, his agent and Barca never found the common ground they were looking for, and that's it. I feel like, I mean, I know Dembélé says negotiations are still going on, but I feel like that's it. It's maybe freelancer and me knowing too many colleagues go through how messy contract negotiations are, but to me, it's just business. I mean, it really is. I mean, it's frustrating because of what this particular player is capable of in theory. There are few as fast and few as impressive with the ball as him. But at this point, I mean, it's time to move on, because it is time to move on, where it's the end of the Dembélé chapter. And I think in hindsight, as terrible as it is to lose a talent like Dembélé, because very few are like him in the world. And again, if Xavi is going to be looking out on the across the how much ever Barca has to spend, but he's looking out and saying, hey, I want to bring in another winger like Dembélé, Barca is going to be hard pressed to find someone who in theory does what Dembélé does on an open market for anything that Barca can afford. So unfortunately, it feels like it's going to be a loss potentially in the short term. But I mean, in the long term, yeah, you lose a player that on his wages, Barca, it's going to restructure the entire wage structure to have to bring in to what the client and the agent are demanding. And from a business sense, unfortunately, you've got to cut the loss on that. And again, it hurts more because of what his price tag that he was never going to be able to live up to was.
Yeah, I have two thoughts. First, I agree that he wrote the message himself. That was not written by a professional, you know. Either he wrote it by himself or he just grabbed some drunk off the street and said, hey, do you want to write a message on my Instagram? You know, one or the other. The other thing is that the negotiations lasted more than 6 months. I think that if you play for a club and that club has paid you millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of euros, and there's no blame here, while you're injured all the time, while your behavior has not always been professional. The reports that are in the media, that's the tip of the iceberg of everything that is out there regarding Dembélé in Barcelona. The club actually protects him a lot, as the club should, because it's not in the club's interest to throw all the players' dirty laundry out into Sport and Mundo Deportivo. You know, that's not good for anybody. Those negotiations should not be a zero-sum game. You know, those negotiations, if, you know, 6 months ago or at some point during those 6 months, it becomes clear that what the club wants to pay, not what the club can afford, but what the club wants to pay, or what Dembélé wants to get from the club, not what Dembélé could afford to give up, but what he wants to get from the club. If it becomes clear that it's so far apart, Dembélé and the club should be able to sit together already months ago and say, hey, you know, this is not going to happen. Is there any way that Dembélé can leave the club so that the club does not lose all of our investment? Most players do this. You see it with Memphis and Olympique Lyon. Memphis asked Lyon to negotiate with Barcelona 1 year before he came. And then 6 months before he came, Barcelona didn't have money, but at least Lyon knew like what the deal was and they could prepare. You see it with Eric Garcia, who asked City to negotiate with Barcelona. You see it with Mbappe. Mbappe asked to leave Paris Saint-Germain last summer to go to Madrid. You know, even though Paris Saint-Germain does not need the money at all, even less so than Barcelona, of course, even though Mbappe has actually delivered on the pitch. But all over Europe, like, good players leave their clubs, but respect their clubs. So I think that if Dembélé is put in the stands, it's because they are just fed up. Mm-hmm. It's because Dembélé and his agents have been negotiating with us in bad faith and have been wasting our time. So that is my take on it. I think it's disappointing. I think it's not good, not in our interest at all that he does not play. I would prefer to have him on the pitch, even if he leaves for free the end of the season, because, you know, even more so, you know, the day of the decision, we freaking lose Ansu Fati again to injury. So I'm totally disgusted by the whole situation. But if he is not playing, it's because, you know, people at the club just cannot look at themselves in the mirror after how Dembélé's camp have wasted our time for 6 months.
Yeah, I think moving forward, that's the question, right? That I agree with you, and I think Xavi will agree with us, even if those behind the scenes might not, that Barcelona, the goal continues on. As I said, it's a business side of Dembélé. You're losing Dembélé due to business, due to negotiations, due to all the stuff off the field. So Dembélé's gone, whether it's now or 6 months. Either way, Barcelona are going to continue on. The club continues on, the club moves on, and Barca are still going to be desperate to get top four. The Champions League, the Supercopa, Copa del Rey, all gone. No trophies for that this season. 17 points off the top of the Liga at the moment. Napoli coming up in the Europa League. And as you said, losing Ansu Fati and Pedri. Now we're recording this right after Athletic Club. You'll be hearing this the day after the match, of course. Yeah, so with all of those questions moving forward, I think Xavi's probably going to say the same thing we are, that, hey, I mean, I know that we have to put pride aside for a little bit. This player's gone. We know he's gone, but I have to use this asset because I'm going to need him on the field for the remainder of this season. So, okay, now we're going to switch gears a little bit to this Athletic Club. To your point, yes, I think Ansu Fati and Pedri, unfortunately, especially when news and the headlines of how long they're out for, because with Ansu's emotional reaction, that is kind of what, it doesn't seem great. It doesn't, not good. It's not great. So to quote a wise man on Twitter.com, to sum up the whole match, he said this at halftime, by the way, Levan. Lucky to go into halftime tied. If Bilbao played as well against other teams as when they play us, they'd be in Europe. And I think you're right. The Athletic Club played, and that's you, of course. And that is Barcelona on Twitter. Give them a follow. But yeah, I think they played really, really well. That's true. I thought Pedri was the best player on the field, and Ansu can change a game. And I think that's some of all of that is what makes it most frustrating. And I think these are one of those matches where, as I'm still, you're going to see the match review first, and then you'll have heard this. But as I'm trying to figure out what the top five headlines are, as I try to break down that YouTube video, I mean, Pique had a great game. Araujo had a great and not so great game. Des came on to play at a position as a left winger, but all that stuff, even the Busquets point about tactics or whatever, I feel like we don't have time for any of that because of how much happened in this game. And it feels like there was just so much going on, right? Ferran Torres scored his first goal with the club. Pedri and Gabi started their first game together. It's just, there's so much that happened in this match. I don't even know where to begin outside of the fact that Ansu and Pedri might be lost for the future. But how do we even talk about this game in context?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic. So now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Ansu is the headline. So I think it is hamstring. They were talking about the muscles in his hind legs. You know, that it's not a knock that he received. And now he has to recover from the knock. No, it's another muscle injury. Apparently, it seemed like a muscle injury too, to be honest. Although some people were saying that it might be cramp. I like where this team is going. We struggled at the fullback positions, Jordi Alba. And you know that I think Jordi Alba is an amazing footballer. But Jordi Alba does not perform well in games where there's a lot of pressure. So games at the San Mamés, games at Anfield, where with teams that just go at him and go at him and keep going at him, he loses his head. He makes mistakes, and he does not have the heart to recover from those mistakes. And Dani Alves, have we ever seen a 38-year-old play 120 minutes of football with the intensity of Dani Alves? I thought that was nice to see. He did make some mistakes, though, especially in the first half. And I thought he made mistakes in one of his other games as well. So is he going to iron out those mistakes, or is he going to keep making them? We don't know. Araujo, difficult match for him. But, you know, you play a right-footed center back on the left, whose only weakness is playing the ball out of defense. So that is always tough against a team that presses so well as Bilbao. The real story of the match for us is that Ansu is injured. But for the match, it's just about how great Bilbao played. You have to give them credit.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think the one-off Copa del Rey matches are better. I enjoyed them. But the crowd at the San Mamés, the nature of it, the way Athletic Club play, the weather as well. Athletic Club just outplayed Barcelona. And while it is a tough pill to swallow, it's true. I think even starting on the back line and then moving forward, I agree with your sentiments on Alba. I've said the same thing, that he's a top three, top five attacking fullback still in the world today. I mean, well, we'll say left back and not include right backs, but left back, very few that we're going to be able to bring. Every other name you mentioned, whether it's Grimaldo, Agaia, or whoever it is that you mentioned at left back to come in for Jordi Alba, you're going to lose something offensively. But yeah, defensively in games like this, you put him up against Nico Williams, and I mean, it was a wrap. You saw that immediately, that it was a wrap. It was going to be all night like that. And then Iñaki Williams comes on because Sanchet gets hurt. And the combination that the brothers even had was too much for that right side. And yeah, and this is an interesting puzzle that Xavi, I think, is going to have to figure out, where I don't even think the personnel he has might be able to get the conclusion he wants, where the way Xavi plays and the way that they're going to build up and work through that pressure, you need Eric Garcia's progressive passing. It is essential to building up and actually providing Busquets the necessary long passes to bypass Busquets when necessary, where instead of always having Busquets have to drop so deep, because that was the problem, where Busquets was dropping so deep and then Athletic Club were just, you know, they were licking their lips and they're off to the races. And so Garcia's progressive passing can alleviate some of that pressure. But then to survive defensively, you need Ronald Araujo. You need Araujo on the field, shutting down guys. And even though he had poor moments, there was also, especially against Iñaki Williams when he came on, that game could have been worse if not for Araujo. And then, absolutely. And then the great irony is that Piqué has arguably been the most consistent, best center defender under Xavi that he's had. So it really is a puzzle for Xavi to break down along that back line. But I think what you know is, as we said, Dani Alves was good, but a 38-year-old Dani Alves, especially when we saw the last two matches in El Clasico when he had to go against Vinny Jr., you see that Dani Alves is 38 in those instances. And the other side, what Jordi Alba can offer you isn't offset by what Alves does. And then again, in the middle, you have Busquets and Piqué. And then again, Araujo can't really pass his way out of trouble. And Eric Garcia, as we've said, 1v1 against a counterattack isn't great either. So you have all players individually. You pick them up and say, Jordi Alba, yeah, of course I'd start Jordi Alba. But who are you starting him next to? Yes, I'd start Dani Alves. He certainly has the talent still. But then what is next to him and what is protecting him? For Ronald Araujo, who is going to be passing out and making sure that Busquets has the support he needs on the ground? And then you start to look farther up the field for that. But yeah, it's just, it's a puzzle that is impossible to fit together with this personnel. And it's, again, another flashpoint that this is where Barca is with their squad at the moment. They have a lot of individual great players, but putting it all together is a lot more difficult. Where even back to the time of Koeman, I think Xavi's tactics have improved. I think Barca looked better, but it's hard to even tell how Barca looked better when Pedri wasn't on the field. I'm transitioning to Pedri because he was the best player in the game. There's no argument. And Barca only controlled the match when Pedri was controlling the match.
I think he was our best player on the game. He was not necessarily the best player on the pitch.
I think Iker Muniain was the best player on the field.
Yeah. Although Pedri was also really good.
He was really good.
Yeah.
We're not arguing.
I think one of the things that Xavi could do is play three in the back. You know, how do you solve an issue where, you know, the problem is that we don't have fullbacks? You play without fullbacks and you go three in the back. I think the problem with three in the back is then who would you play there? So you want Araujo probably on the right or in the middle. You want Piqué in there, but then you're not going to put Piqué on the right. He's too slow. So you put Piqué in the middle, Araujo on the right. Who do you put on the left? You can put Eric Garcia on the left. You could also put Frankie de Jong in a three-man back line, which I like a lot. But if you put Frankie de Jong in a three-man back line, like he's not going to accept playing center left back.
Well, in that match, in that match today, Busquets was the one taking up that position when De Jong came on the field. And then you saw the issues there. And then De Jong wound up backtracking anyway. So it was this constant scramble that you needed Busquets there in the buildup, but you needed De Jong there defensively. And he just kept getting caught out in that position. I mean, I think ideally speaking, you would have Piqué in the middle, Araujo on the right, and Garcia on the left. But I think it depends on personnel on the other team, too. If their best player is a left winger, then Araujo goes on the... Let me flip it around, and then he goes on the right. And if they're fastest, best attacker is a right winger, then Araujo's on the left. And I think that's almost how you have to play it.
Yeah, that also makes sense. But I do see a future where, you know, they're with all the talent that we have in the midfield, Frankie's role might be the center back in a back three, where you have Araujo, Frankie, and Eric Garcia, which could be very interesting. If not, if you play 4-3-3, what I like, and I'm a huge admirer of Busquets, what I don't like is when Busquets drops in between the two center backs. Because what happens is that, you know, the two center backs don't push up. So you just have three people in the back that can pass the ball to each other. And often there's like no clear progression on where they take the ball forward because we don't have the midfielders that then drop back. And Busquets is very static because he's a pivot. So he doesn't take the ball forward himself either. However, if you have Frankie in the pivot, Frankie can drop back in between those two center backs perfectly. He can go there, pick up the ball, because then he can pass it or he can actually drive it forward and break lines that way. So if we're going to, in possession, have a holding midfielder who constantly drops in between our own two center backs, then Frankie might be that guy. We'll see.
But I think the personnel on the other team matters too. As we said, Athletic Club is... at this point, at 33 years old in his career, is very antithetical to what Busquets does well, where, especially with Pedri and Gavi, and it was, again, antithetical to the way that Xavi wants to set up his numerical advantages in the middle. So, again, the system he wants to employ, I think, eventually is that double pivot with the two high interiors in front, and you can't really do that with Busquets when the other team is pressing in this way. Because again, you're leaving Pedri and Gavi alone on these islands, and Gavi wasn't perfect with his ball playing today. And I mean, I think he was also just a bit out of position. That actually shows, that was where I actually thought Pedri was amazing today. It wasn't even the spins and the turns and the ball retention were one thing when Barca had the ball. That was one thing.
It's knowing where to be.
Yeah. Those things are impressive. Yeah. But it was the way that, as we've said, where, why did De Jong and Busquets not really work together? Well, it's because De Jong doesn't really make up for when Busquets gets caught out in a position. De Jong doesn't really get in the right spots that he needs to clean that mess up. Pedri is just excellent at cleaning up all of those messes, and not Busquets' messes, just in general, in the middle of the field, high, low, it doesn't matter. He's everywhere he needs to be. But it's, and again, I think Gavi works hard enough to be everywhere he needs to be, but Pedri also gets in on the tackle. He wins the ball. And again, he retains the ball the second he gets it because his skill is superior to most other midfielders. And the stat that makes me the saddest is that Pedri and Ansu have still played less than 12 matches total together and have only started three matches since Pedri arrived. That's an incredible, incredible lack of football that we've seen. We saw it just for that breath in the second half when Antu dropped in and he had that little messy dink, right? Where Pedri pivots, hands back to Antu, and Antu, yeah, I think it was an ill-advised shot. It was too long, but yeah, I mean, the point is, yes, Pedri and Antu have not really ever played together. Yeah, and that's just frustrating. I don't want to harp on this, but I also want to think like where Nico fits in all that too, because clearly he was brought on at halftime to help Barca control the game a bit more. So Nico comes on, is a bit wider to the right. Pedri comes to the left interior and Gabi higher on the left spot, which again, it's not really where you get the best out of Gabi either. But I think these players are talented enough to all kind of fit together if you have runners up the field. And I also want to give you the room here if you want to talk about Ferran Torres, whose goal was pretty incredible, actually matched the Iker Muniain goal, which is also incredible. But Ferran Torres, I think his movement was really good. And now yeah. I look around and I say, hey, no offense to Abde. I mean, Abde is, again, a promising young player who's 20 years old in the start of his Barca career. Jukla is useful, as we've talked about. But you replace Jukla with Antu, and you replace Abde with whoever Barca can find, whether it's a nine or a winger, moving Ferran Torres out to the right. And now you're talking about players that are just better. I mean, Ferran Torres' goal, Barca don't, who do they have to finish his goals like that? Antu, that's it. And then Ferran Torres, is you could clearly see with his movement, with his understanding of where to be on the ball, his first touch, it's just, that's a professional footballer at not the peak of his powers, but that is a professional footballer who is not taking a large jump up to play for FC Barcelona. That's a player who now immediately fits as a professional in a way that Jukla and Abde just, they're not there yet. And that's fine. You just need more from them. And it's asking too much of them.
It's not just that they're not there yet. They might never get there.
Sure.
You know, Ferran Torres is a way superior talent to Abde, who still is one-dimensional. And we don't know if he can add dimensions to his game. We discussed this, I think, a couple of sessions ago. Or Ferran Jutla, who, you know, we just signed from Espanyol B over the summer. And he's already, what, 21, 22, 23 years?
He's about to be 23 in like 2 weeks. Yeah. So he'll be 23 in 2 weeks. And Abde, again, just turned 20. But again, Abde's played 25 professional matches, something like that. So I just put a reminder on him.
Yeah. But I mean, Ferran has already played how many matches for Spain and scored how many goals for Spain? He's already played for Manchester City. He's one of the, he's probably the biggest young talented forward in Spain after Ansu, and one of the main talents in Europe. You know, what's so frustrating is that during the second half, and I was not actually worried about winning or losing. I was enjoying the game. I was enjoying the way that we played in the second half more so than the first half. There's something about playing at San Mamés that even when they beat us, I still enjoy watching Bilbao play as well, because the team is just so enthusiastic and proud. And they're not mercenaries. There's just like real football passion when I see them play, and even more so when they play us for some reason that cannot be helped. But that's why when I watch them, I admire them and I kind of enjoy it, even when I'm frustrated with not winning. But it was at some point where we started like bringing all these other players on. I was like, wow, Ansu is coming on. And wow, we take off Gabi, but we put on Frankie de Jong, take off this player and we put on Nico Gonzalez. And I was like, this team is really going to come together. Like, you know, look how Ferran Torres already fits. This is becoming like a really, really strong team. And all of a sudden, you know, where we were relying on all these kids from Barca B, some of whom might not be here for more than one or two seasons, all of a sudden we are seeing all these players on the pitch that can play such a huge role and be part of a really special team in the years to come. So for that to end with Ansu Fati suffering another long-term injury, that's just heartbreaking.
Yeah, we are getting an update that Ansu could be out for a minimum of 2 months. So at this point, yeah, don't expect him back until March or April. And at that point, I would shut him down for the season. If he's going to come back the last week of April, I mean, just shut him down. But in the same respect, like all these hamstring injuries, all these muscle injuries, at some point you're going to have to figure out a plan to get him back on the field and slowly integrate him back on the field. So it might be better for him to just play 2 or 3 weeks prior to. But yeah, no, you're right. The Ansu Fati thing is going to, moving forward, overshadow everything, because I think, you know, and watching on again on a feed, depending on whatever feed you were watching on, The big narrative for those who don't watch Barca is always just about, oh, Barca are a shell. Of course, they're declining. The Camp Nou is crumbling, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Without this, and we do it throughout the season too. When you look at a game and watch a game, it's hard to continue constantly remember the players that aren't in it, right? Because that's an excuse. That's all it is. I mean, even Xavi after this match mentioned that Jordi Alba probably picked up an early knock and probably played the whole game with a knock, which is interesting and tells you what how much that Alba and Xavi trust Sergiño Dest, who came in as a left winger, even a right back. But again, I don't want to do the Dest thing again. I did that earlier in the week. But back to the point of Ansu is that for the rest of this season now, as Barca are fighting for top four, I'm going to constantly be thinking that, oh, Barca's most prolific and most clinical finisher is not available, regardless of how with Pedri gone again. I think we actually almost got a little, as he was gone, we almost kind of forgot with Gabi and Nico and even trying to figure out the De Jong and Busquets thing. I think we forgot the narrative that Pedri was that good. It wasn't just Messi bringing the best out of him. If anything, he was better today finding those spots higher up the field where Messi would even occupy.
It shows so, even more now. I agree.
So between Ansu and Pedri, I have to make sure. I mean, I host the show twice a week and do all this other content. I want to make sure I do my due diligence to continue to kind of make that excuse, if you will, that, hey, everybody else, if you're a Man United fan or a Chelsea fan, getting in my mentions, that Barca don't have their best players. Wait till Barca do have their best players and wait till they have some money again. Right. And like people are going crazy about Haaland, but as Manuel Veth said earlier, I mean, we don't know about Haaland, but if Barca have some money to spend, if you can improve your fullbacks, if you can potentially get another center back, if you could get, now you're going to probably look for another winger. And if you can reinforce the rest of your squad and you can go 15 to 16 deep where you can survive not having to put Ansu and Pedri out an extra time of these matches. Cause you're right. I was excited about the depth against El Clasico. That was one of the things that I came out of it with saying, hey, Barca actually are pretty solid if they can get everybody healthy. And then you're right. This like completely, it's like a hot air balloon. You're excited. You're waving at everybody. And then we just set the hot air balloon on fire in the air. And it's the Hindenburg up there.
And it's not even about the season. Like, it's difficult to be optimistic about Ansu Fati actually becoming what we thought we had, because, if some people's bodies are just not made for professional sports, no matter how much talent they have and no matter how great their personality is, because he has like his personality and his talent, like both of those things are unquestionable and so incredibly rare. He is so special, but his body is not made for this. Because it's not normal for people to break after less than 90 minutes on the pitch.
Yeah, and I mean, I want to throw out it's not again just him. There's players, Michael Owen, there's Fernando Torres, I would say I'm going to whisper this to those Haaland stands, but look at how many games that Erling Haaland has missed with Borussia Dortmund for the last 2 years. Just look at those numbers. Yes. He's 21 years old too. He only plays like 68% of the games. So just look at how difficult it is in modern football to be these athletic specimens. I mean, the Liverpool trio that I think about in particular, Salah and Sadio Mane, they have been so durable, incredibly durable. I mean, even De Bruyne had to shake off that the idea that he was always injured. Even Messi back in the Tata Martino days, where there was this idea that, oh, is Messi now going to be this always injured player? And fortunately he was able to shake off all of that. But yeah, it's difficult to be, Neymar was supposed to be. What was Neymar supposed to be? And so that's why we talk about the likes of Kylian Mbappe. If anything, it's incredible that these forwards, especially the ones who play at the speed of Mbappe and Dembele and Ansu, where Ansu doesn't have the top rate speed, but look at the runs that he's being asked to make. Those are it's grueling on your body. And to play at that level, as you mentioned, with those nerves at the CMMS in the pouring down rain, like these things all matter. I mean, how many times did you see Barca players almost going back to the match here, how many times did Barca players slip on that field? I don't know what the athletic club players put in their cleats that Barca players didn't have on their studs, but I must have seen 4 or 5 or 6 times where Pedri and De Jong in particular just kept wiping out over and over and over again on the far side in the second half. So Barca's left attacking flank in that second half. I don't know if there was a puddle there or what was going on, but the conditions did matter in this match too. It was Athletic Club with a fire in their belly with all that weather and all that crowd. And you're right. Like these kind of matches break down Barcelona, but it goes back to the idea that Barca just I feel like they just need to win one of these. They need to win one of these big matches, the El Clasico in the Supercopa, even though that trophy doesn't really truly matter, or this match against Athletic Club in the Copa del Rey. I think it really galvanized the team last year to make that comeback against Granada and to go far in the Copa del Rey. I think that mattered. And now you're looking at the rest of the schedule and you're like, well, they're desperate to make top four. And yeah, there's Napoli in the Europa League, but which matches are Barcelona? What matches can propel them forward? What matches, when morale is the way it is, losing onto Dembélé is basically going to be just waving at everybody from the stands, maybe, or he's going to be sold to Newcastle or wherever in a week or two. So other than Ferran Torres trying to inject some energy in, but Eric Garcia is still sitting on the sideline too. I mean, what is Barcelona holding on to now in the next few matches, and how can they win a big one? Because Deportivo Alavés,
look on the bright side. Braithwaite has his hair back.
Well, I was going to say, Braithwaite wanted to get a hat trick for Barcelona this year. And I mean, what happens if Barca puts five past Deportivo Alavés and Martin Braithwaite has his hat trick? Because now he has to start for Ansu Fati. So I mean, it's all possible. But I mean, now we're immediately going, well, Ansu's gone again. Now Luke de Jong, you have to hold on to Luke de Jong completely. You can't let Luke de Jong go. And Braithwaite, I mean, but now he becomes important. Luke de Jong, you're going to need three or four more goals from him this season. You're going to need six goals from Braithwaite throughout the rest of the year.
It's just crazy because I was like, we were looking at the match and we're like, look at all the depth, look at all the quality. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, we ended up with two forwards who are Serginho Dest and Martin Braithwaite.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it is great. If anybody didn't know, this is not a podcast that we're coming out of a positive. I know, trying to be optimistic and therapeutic. But yeah, it's not only was it a loss to Athletic Club, because I think we can live with losing at the CMMS in that way, in a season where top four matters way more than the Copa del Rey. Barca have enough Copa del Rey trophies. They have more than everybody else. But
I've never cared about the Copa.
It's the nature of this loss, certainly. And I always try to end this with a positive thing. Vaughn, I don't really have one, other than if Barcelona, with its January window, I don't think another player is going to come in. I mean, with the exception of maybe Barcelona can try to apply for some kind of hardship thing. But like, even the one name we saw, Lucas Boyer from Elche, I don't want to do the Braithwaite thing again and rip the best forward from a team in the 15th place. And it just looks bad on Barca. It winds up being a waste of money. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, Young and Braithwaite are already there. You already got Braithwaite. You don't need to try to do it again. So I wouldn't do anything like that. I would say either Barca can try to loan in a player who's a top player who needs to go out on loan, just like Barca did for Coutinho the other way, if they can find that player. But if not, business in January is done. And try to grab as many euros as you possibly can for the summertime, when you're going to have to reinforce a bunch of different positions. I mean, Dest could also be sold. I just throwing that out there. It's very, very, very likely that Dest, not likely, I don't know, it's like 60-40, I'd say, that Dest is no longer a Barca player in 2 weeks.
We'll see. When is Memphis back?
Memphis, I think there's just a small knock, so he should be back in a week or two. And you're right. It's unfair for me to forget Memphis, because he is still Barca's leading goal scorer with 8 goals.
And not just that. Like, the Memphis that we have seen has been a Memphis who has consistently been played to his weaknesses. Because what Memphis needs, and it doesn't really matter if you put him in the middle of that front line or on the left of the front line, is he needs people who attack the space around him so he can combine with them, but also play through balls so that defenders need to adjust to the people around them who attack the space, which gives him a little bit of space in order to create space for a shot or for an action. That's where his qualities are. Whereas consistently he's been played as a nine with people besides him who need the ball at the feet. And then Memphis is tasked with either making vertical runs or making runs to the first or the second post or being completely isolated. If you have Memphis in that front line with Ferran Jukla and Ferran Torres and Martin Braithwaite, three people who actually attack space, then all of a sudden we might gain a Memphis Depay who is going to look a lot better and who will be a lot more useful than the version that we have seen for most of the season.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. I think Memphis next to a player like a Braithwaite, and then also Ferran Torres on the other side of that front line, with Pedri in particular in behind, makes Memphis. I think that's one of the better versions, or the best version, that Barca that you could see Memphis. Okay, so Levan, again, I always try to end on a positive. I don't think we can do that today. But the only positive was I appreciate you joining me, staying up late in Barcelona. But hopefully, yes, Ansu, the positives will be, if you're listening to this, Ansu's only out for a month, or I mean, I can't say only a month, but he's only out for a few weeks and it's not the rest of the season. And then we should get an update on Pedri. Apparently it's nothing serious, said Xavi. So hopefully that we're not really boohooing too much. Again, losing Ansu again, heartbreaking, but if Pedri is able to continue on, Barca is still, I think, in the driver's seat for top four. Yeah, Levan, last word from you.
Not a positive. Reportedly, Gavi's renewal will be announced very shortly. So that's a huge plus as well. Like getting Gavi and Araujo renewed are more important than Usman's renewal.
For sure. 100%. Yep. I agree with that. And then even Nico getting a first team number helps a little bit with squad building. As crazy as that sounds, like registering him in the first team is important for building a squad, and it continues to make the team deeper and deeper. But anyway,
a very pretty number.
14.
Yeah.
Yeah, I keep seeing Coutinho in it. So it's going to take a little while to get the Coutinho out of my eyes. But until that happens, congratulations to Nico Gonzalez for number 14. But yeah, thanks so much for joining me again, Levan. And thanks so much for everyone here listening to the show. For those who stuck with us on days like this, you know that we're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that different stuff, Patreon and YouTube, blah, 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 blah. So thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. And Forza Barca.
Forza Barca, guys. Don't write any letters.